1340 96.5 KVGC has promised Dr. Rita Kerr, Amador County Health Officer. I've been calling you Health Officer, then I was corrected yesterday and said she's Health Director.
No, I'm the Health Officer.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Connie Vaccarezza is the Public Health Director.
Do you have a badge and everything?
I do, and I didn't bring it with me.
Oh, you could have. Jack Mitchell's with us from the newspaper as well, and this is kind of our version of an Amador County press conference. Dr. Kerr, before we go any further, apparently there is a computer virus associated with this now too?
Well, I'm not going to call it a computer virus, but there is a cybersecurity threat that the county IT director alerted us to this morning. There is a malicious website pretending to be the live map of COVID-19 global cases that Johns Hopkins University publishes.
Mm-hmm.
And if people visit this malicious website, it infects the user with a Trojan, which is an information-stealing Trojan designed to exfiltrate a variety of sensitive data. So my best advice at this point is don't go Google searching coronavirus map on your own. I would go to maybe the CDC site and then use their link to a coronavirus map if you really want to see one.
So, Dr. Kerr, let's just repeat again. You issued a order directive last night.
I did.
Yesterday afternoon. Can you go ahead and just expand on that a little bit for folks? Because we've been kind of touching just the highlights of it, waiting for you to arrive today.
All right. So, Jim, may I clarify your question?
Yes.
Do you want me to read the order? Or would you like me to tell you how this came about?
Yes.
You'd like to know how and why it came about?
Yes.
Okay.
And then when you read about the order, don't read the whereases and has ifs and all that.
And...
But we do want to know the 250 and the, because there are some questions that will play into that.
Yes.
That
will
lead into that.
So let's talk about the basic idea behind why the state came down with this directive, these guidelines, this. Let me back up just a little. On Tuesday morning when I gave my presentation to the Board of Supervisors, we had no cases in Amador County, and I just confirmed with my staff we still have no positive case results. All the results that have floated in over the past few days from samples collected last week and earlier this week have so far come in negative.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot out there pending results. I had no idea this situation was going to progress as quickly as it has, but on Wednesday, the World Health Organization declared this a pandemic, which means there is worldwide epidemic spread in multiple countries at this point. This virus is affecting every continent except Antarctica. Okay? There has been community-level transmission on most continents, including the United States. And what community-level transmission is somebody comes in, they're sick with the virus, and they have no idea where they got it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a contact to somebody else who they know had it. They didn't travel to an area where it's been spreading in the community. And so that's the definition of community spread. That actually happened in Northern California a couple weeks ago in localized communities. But at this point, we have no evidence of it locally. But we also don't know how many people who haven't hit our radar yet might either have been exposed and be incubating or just starting to develop mild symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So on Wednesday evening at about 8:30, the California Department of Public Health convened a call for all the health officers in all of California and said, we're coming down with this more aggressive mitigation guidance. And we are considering all of California now at risk for community spread. So in order to not overwhelm our healthcare system, we need to take some pretty aggressive measures to lower the amount of contact between people so that we are less likely to have a huge spike in cases.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems really pretty drastic. And you're going to hear me use the term flattening the curve. And a picture's worth a thousand words. So I'm going to show you guys a visual, and then when we're done talking, I'll share you a link to it. But basically, in the early stages of an outbreak, our goal is containment. And that's what the individual level quarantines and isolation was all about, was trying to contain it to a, you know, small area. Once community spread has occurred, we have to layer mitigation strategies on top of it. And social distancing is the most effective mitigation strategy we have because we don't have a vaccine. We don't have treatment to shorten, you know, the duration that somebody could spread it. So we have to rely on social distancing. So what these orders are is a way to enforce social distancing and give people really clear guidance what to do. Okay, so a couple things, very important. Number one, anybody who's sick with cold and flu symptoms, upper respiratory, lower respiratory, fever, needs to stay home, stay out of circulation. Don't go to work. Don't go to the school. Don't go to the store. Send somebody else to pick up your groceries or your prescription that's been called in. Don't spread your germs in the community. For the rest of the people who have not developed symptoms, take extra precautions, especially people who have a chronic underlying illness, heart disease, lung disease, immune compromise, or the older folks. And the reason we're talking about age is because the experience worldwide is that the older somebody is, the more likely they are to have severe or even fatal disease. Mm-hmm. One of the ways we enforce social distancing is by canceling or putting a moratorium on large social gatherings in the community that are not essential to happen right now.
Gotcha.
Why do we do that? Because we don't want to overwhelm our healthcare capacity. As Supervisor Axe brought up during the interview on Tuesday morning, do we have enough hospital beds? Do we have enough ventilators? And I talked about how our emergency structure already accounts for if a patient shows up here at Sutter Amador, needs to be hospitalized, and there's not enough beds here, they can be transferred to another hospital. Well, and when the entire state is at risk, there are no hospital beds anywhere else available to transfer to. And that's when the healthcare system as a whole can get overwhelmed. So this statewide strategy is trying to flatten that spike of cases that could happen and give us, you know, to the point where we know cases will happen. We want the rate of new cases per day to be low enough that our healthcare system can handle the capacity.
So we're trying to stop it, and so we're trying to slow it down and
We are still working containment strategies, and those being people who are sick, isolated from others.
So that brings about some questions that we had, gatherings.
Yes.
So does this cover all gatherings?
It does. Yeah, well, okay.
So what about... Okay.
There are some things that are considered essential. First of all, the goal on Wednesday night from the state, and I don't know if any of you heard the governor's press conference yesterday. At first, they were saying, you know, businesses, not necessarily. And now there are businesses like theme parks that have decided to go ahead and close down.
Right.
But school is considered an essential service. It's also a place where people regularly gather, and the same population of people regularly gathers. Also, closing schools is very disruptive because childcare issues, and then where are those kids going to go and be in a congregate setting that's uncontrolled? So at this point in time, the guidance in California is on a county-by-county, jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis, we can decide whether or not school closures are appropriate based on cases in the community and contact investigations. But unlike Ohio and Michigan and some other states which have gone into statewide closures, Seattle did theirs in a local Kings County cluster fashion, not the entire state of Washington closed down. But you have heard some states, the entire state is closed down for 3 weeks.
So I have a friend of mine that's a teacher and a coach, and we were talking yesterday, and the school district has canceled practices and games.
I'll tell you who canceled it. I was in consultation with the school yesterday, and we were talking about the possibility for outdoor sports, whether social distancing is possible. Mm-hmm. And we thought it perhaps could be, but I said, of course, that's going to be dependent on your other teams what their school district's policy is, the California Interscholastic Federation came down with the edict yesterday that all interscholastic sports and practices are canceled until the end of the month.
Good, but you've put a teacher in a classroom with 30 kids, but you won't let them go out on the field in the open air. You follow what I'm saying with that?
I understand that not all of this, you know, seems to connect the dots.
Yeah.
I think the challenges with the sports are the fact that they draw spectators. They draw in other coaches who are not necessarily mm-hmm. also in the classroom. There are outside coaches and coaching assistants and other issues like that. It's somewhat harder to sterilize, disinfect sporting equipment than it is a solid surface desktop. So those sorts of things. And it's a mixed community. And the nature of the sport, you're tossing that ball or whatever it is back and forth from person to person, contacting their hands.
Let's go back to gatherings. Okay. Funerals.
JD's waving at you.
I just had a very quick question. Then this is a real simple one. People cough into their sleeves.
Yes.
Right here at the bend, and then everyone's touching elbows as a greeting. Is that a concern?
Well, the thought is that you're less likely to touch your face with your elbow than you are with your hand.
Okay.
So it's relatively safer. Ideally, a greeting is going to be a no-touch greeting. You're going to nod your head. You're going to bow.
Finally.
You're going to wave. Something like that.
Okay.
So funerals.
Yes.
Will funerals be canceled? Will funerals still be allowed?
The guidance on gatherings, such as a funeral, would be people who feel they are at risk need to not go.
Okay.
I need to call you back.
People can gather in groups of no more than 250 and work to maintain that social distancing of 6 feet between people. Now, okay. Can I finish qualifying that first? Thank you. What I'm talking about is, you know, passing by someone within 6 feet for a brief passage by is not really considered high risk. It's when people are, for example, seated next to each other, listening to a speaker or watching a performance for, you know, 15 minutes or longer. That's when we're talking about that social distancing being important.
So I'm going to a dinner tomorrow night that we'll all be sitting around tables. Should that event be canceled?
How big is it?
50 people.
Is anybody high risk?
I'll be there. I'm 64 years old.
So you need to make that
so make your individual decision
for yourself. If it's a gathering of 10 or more high-risk people, more than 10 high-risk people, as Chris referred to earlier, mm-hmm. we advise that not happen.
It's really hard for me because I still think I'm 30. Seriously, in my mind, I'm 64 years old. I'm at risk. I'm one of these people that are at risk, and I work with younger people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm the oldest person that works here. And sometimes, no, seriously. But let's go back to church. So in church, I'm sitting next to my friend in the pew there.
Right.
And we're shaking hands and, you know.
We are issuing this guidance to all of the pastors in the community, and mm-hmm. a couple of the larger congregations had already reached out to me. And we are advising for, if it's possible, to do it in an alternative way. A lot of churches are already live streaming their services so that vulnerable people can stay home and watch from afar. And even, you know, then they say, how can I put my donation in the offering plate? Well, guess what? There's online giving available.
Right.
So there's lots of ways we can socially distance. Let's use our technology to our advantage.
Dr. Kerr, here's a question for you. 250 seems like a randomly chosen number. Why 250?
Okay. I'll tell you why. The Bay Area counties, particularly Santa Clara, who've been heavily affected by this, they have had pretty significant community transmission happen already, originally came down with a 1,000-person cutoff as the guidance, and they have the CDC staff there with them in their emergency operations center, epidemiologists who this is what they do for a living, mm-hmm. studying these trends. And the CDC altered that guidance, and that's how that was developed.
So are we waiting for this to go away, to run its course? Is this going to come back again next year? What do we hope to – because, you know, we had let's face it, we've had West Nile virus that was going to kill us all. We had the swine flu, the bird flu, mm-hmm. Ebola, that Zika virus. It was all going to the end of the world, and we're still here, and we lived through it. Now this has come along. Do we hope that this will settle down like those did, and or will it be coming around again next year?
Okay, I would say, Jim, of course we hope it will settle down. Do we know it will? Can we count on that? Can we be complacent about that? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. We have to continue to, as I said, take these relatively aggressive mitigation measures in order not to overwhelm our healthcare system. Our goal as public health is health and safety. The California law, the code that gives me my responsibilities and my authority to do my job is called the Health and Safety Code. And that is our number one purpose.
Got another question here. It says, what about restaurants?
At this point, restaurants are considered businesses. And the state and the federal agencies have not yet issued guidance for closure of restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly should be taking measures to sanitize, to maybe move their tables further apart so that people aren't sitting quite so close. I did hear anecdotal stories that there were restaurants in the city of San Francisco, which has also been relatively affected more than some other areas, where restaurants were actually screening their patrons on the way in the door by taking temperatures and doing a symptom screen before they would let people in and just making sure their customers who were coming in to eat weren't sick.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, let me tell you that locally here, Sutter Amador has instituted visiting people. Actually, anybody, they've limited the entrances to two doors. I believe it's the one on the outpatient side of the building and then, of course, the ER entrance. Mm-hmm. There are staff stationed at each of those two doors who will screen everyone coming into the building and triage them appropriately if they are sick. If they're a sick visitor, they're not going to be in. If they are a patient that's needing services, they're going to be appropriately protected mm-hmm. and taken to the area with an escort that they need to be so that they're not exposing people on the way.
Dr. Kerr, let's talk about the hospital. We've had a lot of calls and questions. The tents
yes.
we see set up
the
there.
Surge yes. tents.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Explain
that to
so
us.
So part of emergency preparedness and planning, they have to have that kind of equipment available. An example would be a multi-casualty incident, a bus accident or something, and they didn't have enough beds in the ER to handle everybody. They would quickly set up that tent and use it as a triage mm-hmm. and treatment area. So earlier in the week, as part of the preparedness planning, they did a drill and set up their tents. This all happened so quickly that it became apparent that they were probably going to need to leave it up.
Sure.
And they had to get authorization from their state licensing agency to use that treatment area if needed. And so they've gone through that process and they have the authorization to
gotcha.
Do it. So right now the surge tent is sitting there empty, available if we start to see an overwhelming number of cases mm-hmm. that need treatment. And they're using the triage tent to for people who are appropriate for testing, referred by their doctor for testing, to be able to collect the swabs without having to physically bring them in the emergency room. So
that's
the purpose of that.
I also read in that order from the governor that they've given permission to take over hotels.
The state has the ability to commandeer facilities, if needed, to house and isolate sick individuals.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the testing procedure.
Sure.
When do I go to my healthcare provider or the emergency room and say, I think I should be tested for this? At what point? Because we all have little aches and pains now and then.
Right. But I would say you should always call ahead because you don't want to just show up somewhere, especially where other sick or at-risk mm-hmm. individuals mm-hmm. may be, especially if you're potentially contagious. Okay? So call ahead. Let them do their process of screening over the phone for what you have going on, and when they feel it's appropriate, they will refer you for mm-hmm. the test if they think it's indicated. That doesn't tell you what symptoms to be concerned
exactly.
about. Let me talk about that.
Great.
Fever, and a cough that persists. So if you are like me and you wake up every morning because the heater's been running and your nose is dry and you cough a couple times before you get in the shower and you get out of the shower and it's all gone, that is not something to be concerned about. But if you have a cough that persists through the day, and if you're short of breath, those are the kind of symptoms that are concerning and that you should call and seek advice and medical help for.
Gotcha. Now, about that, you know, I spoke to you before. I said I was real sick. Mike was real sick during the middle, you know, early part of January, of January. And you said there was going to be a test where you could do blood work and see if we had the antibodies or whatever in it.
Well, may I clarify that, Jim?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, there was no community level transmission of coronavirus happening in the United States in the middle of January.
Okay.
So it's highly unlikely. That's what it was. My answer to you yesterday is theoretically, from other diseases that we've had to handle in the past, we can someday develop a test that checks to see whether your body developed antibodies, immunity. So, for example, chickenpox. You can get a blood test as an adult and find out if you ever really had chickenpox as a kid and whether you're immune to it or not.
Sure.
That's the kind of test I'm talking about.
Okay.
That is not the priority right now to develop that test. It may become important in the future, and maybe it will become available. I have no idea what the timing would be on that. So theoretically, it's possible to develop that test, but I have no idea what the timeline would be.
Yeah, because I'll tell you what we had was it was bad.
And it was a lot. There was a lot of folks.
Yeah.
A lot of folks with name it over about that time.
Still floating around.
And in fact, that's the other thing that I hear from the group that I talk to, that when you're out in the community, they're like, you know, it's funny this is coming right now because I kind of had some of these symptoms.
I had it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
they're like,
this,
before it came up, I had it then.
Right.
Do I really have it?
This is cold and flu season.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of influenza type B in the first half of it, and now we're seeing relatively more influenza type A. There are about 20 other viruses on a lab test respiratory disease panel that we can look for. So there's lots of things that can go through the community, infect people, and this novel coronavirus is one of those. And
do you know how many people have been tested in Amador so far?
I'm going to say that during the month of February, it was in the single digits to low double digits, and those were tests based on travel-associated history. Okay,
right.
All of those came back negative.
Mm-hmm.
Since the more widespread ability of testing came about on Monday, we're dozens and maybe even into the low, you know, 100-something, and we are, you know, watching for those results to come back.
Do you know how long does it take for those tests to come back when you are tested?
So the shortest I've seen is 3 days.
Okay.
And the longest I've seen is about 7 to 8 days. Now, the 7 to 8s were when we had to ship them all the way to Atlanta. Now that there is testing capability in the state, that time has gone down. But
there's still a
limit. One of the issues now is that the test kits need a first step that most labs have, but they've used most of it up, and there's a shortage on the piece of the test kit that extracts the RNA of the virus out of its capsule, and then the test kit is what looks to see what that RNA is.
A couple of more questions, and we'll let you go. I know you're busy. So how long does this last? Let's say I contract it. How long will I have it for?
Great question. Let me talk first about if you're exposed, how long it takes to get it.
Okay.
The range at this point from the best studies that we've seen is that the incubation period after exposure until the onset of symptoms is somewhere between 2 and 12 days.
Okay.
And the average being about 5 to 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what does that mean? That means if somebody thinks they were exposed but they don't have symptoms yet and they get a test and it's negative, they might have been tested too early, and they could not yet have a positive test. And so that can be falsely reassuring in that scenario. Let me address what you're asking directly, which is how long does it last? We are seeing illness run its course in mild cases over a week to 10 days. And in severe cases, of course, because they've got pneumonia and require extra support, that takes longer to bounce back from.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other counties that has had firsthand experience with the contact investigation talked about their experience on a local health department call yesterday. And what they were advising was for people with respiratory illness to stay home while they're sick and for 24 hours after all of their symptoms go away. And if they work in a sensitive occupation, they had them wear a simple surgical mask for a couple days beyond that if they have to be, you know, their caregivers for people who are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the sort of guidance. There are, of course, the official agencies studying it with actual swabs of people to see how long the virus lasts in their system. But the test we have is not a culture. It's looking for genetic material. And we can't really tell, is that virus still viable? Can it still infect people? Or has your immune system already knocked it all out and you're just shedding the last of the no longer contagious virus out of your system? So those pieces are still being studied.
Dr. Kerr, have you heard the folks that were on the cruise ship that...
The Grand Princess?
Yeah, Grand Princess.
The one that docked off the coast?
Yeah, they were residents from Amador County.
There's residents from almost every county in California and lots of other places in the U.S.
And how have they tested? Are they still negative?
First of all, nobody's home yet. They've all been under federal quarantine if they haven't tested negative. And anybody off that ship who has tested positive is either in a hospital, if they require hospital care, or in a secure, isolated location under the federal supervision this point. So nobody's home.
Okay. Gotcha. Do you know how many people it was? Do you know the exact number?
I don't know the exact. I have a list, but those ship manifests are only as good as the information people gave them when they made their reservation. So, for example, somebody from a certain family makes a reservation for their entire family, and that family can live in various areas.
Gotcha.
And so everybody gets tagged to the person who made the reservation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have exact numbers.
All right.
So it'd be like me and you who've never traveled, Jim, because we make our wives do all this stuff.
We'd
never show up.
Right.
And do they even claim you live in the same household?
Well, it depends on the week.
So, Dr. Kerr, I think actually, in talking with you today, I think the best thing that you've shared with us is that little chart that you showed us.
Yes, and I will send you a link to that now. You can use that as your, you know, your little lead on the recording.
And a lot of folks said, you know, why are you canceling Dandelion Days? No one's got it here in Amador County. Well, people coming from out of the area can bring it with you.
I'll tell you that Wednesday afternoon, a couple hours before the state call, the health officers from the local jurisdictions, the four of us who cover for each other at times, got on the phone together, and three of the four of us had no cases because Calaveras at that point had just announced theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you know, we're getting to the point where we just need to rip the Band-Aid off this thing and take action as if. And that very evening, the state came down with this guidance.
Gotcha.
I would say the other question I would have, so for information, so I'm a media member, and I've been getting beat up with blowing this out of proportion. Coronavirus, it's the media...
Yeah,
leading us down a path. I'm sure you've heard it, Jim, that we are...
This is the latest one.
I find it interesting that, you know, what we do, for at least in our newspaper and at the Reyes, we call you and say, hey, what's the actual information? And the thing I worry about is on the social media side and with all of the access everyone has to the immediacy and wanting answers right now, we don't have all the answers
right
now.
Right.
We give you the answers, but those come from official sources, which is you.
Yes.
Where would you go locally? I mean, obviously, I would encourage everyone to keep KVGC on 24/7 and listen for updates. We run stuff on our social page. Jim's got a page. Those are we contact you. Is that the best way to?
So we are trying to keep our public health website more updated in a more real-time fashion. Of course, all of us at Public Health wear a lot of hats, and I do not have a dedicated public information officer or a dedicated social media account person. That person also is our, you know, does emergency preparedness and helps with contact investigations and helped a truckload of masks for the healthcare workers get delivered to the hospital yesterday.
Sure.
So they've sometimes got, you know, higher priority things to be working on, but we are doing our best to keep that updated. The California Department of Public Health, their website has really expanded in the last couple days with all the current news releases. And that same CDC.gov coronavirus site that I showed a screenshot of, that's where I'm going.
Sure.
And then if I don't get the answer,
and that's on the CDC site, and there, and I do want to getting back to kind of the beginning of the conversation.
Getting down to the local level.
Be careful where you're getting your information and how you're getting it.
That's what we've been telling people. Hey, for the latest up to date, go to the CDC website.
Yeah,
right. That's on a nationwide level.
Yeah,
I think as close as we can get to the local level is our CDPH website, which is the California Department of Public Health.
Yeah,
and they have a couple of plans that I've heard about that I'm not sure are operational yet.
Yeah.
One of them is they are planning to start publishing case numbers at the county level soon.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also working on a call-in line for people who have questions that will be both English and Spanish. And again, I don't know if they've gotten to the point that they've deployed either of those, but I know both of those are in the works.
Dr. Kerr, do you want to address the panic buying of water and toilet paper?
Have you been buying more?
It gives something. I said to my husband, who was at Costco earlier in the week, how are we on toilet paper at home? And he said, oh, don't worry, we have plenty. So since he's the guy who does the shopping in our house, I have to rely on him. My opinion on that is it gives people something to do to be prepared.
Yeah.
And it's appropriate for people to prepare, but I don't want to see panic mode.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to do here is
I'd like everybody to be good citizens as well, not only to
see, thank you. I've been using that same term.
I was able to, as I drove my son to school yesterday after I got off the phone with you, I really appreciated the discussion that went on between you and Paul Jr. and Beth, because I think that was just a really great example of a appropriate level of concern and wish to protect not only yourself, but your fellow citizens in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, be a good citizen. You know, I mean, do this. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
All the time anyway.
And don't hoard all the bottles of hand sanitizer that are available on the shelf at the store.
Well, the other thing is, you got to realize, now the funny thing is, so I've got kids. You might want to let people know as well that using hand sanitizer is not washing your hands.
No. Right. In fact,
there is a big difference.
It's for the in-between when you can't get to a sink. And you don't need antibacterial soap to wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
The detergents in soap break up the outer lipid fatty membrane around the virus, and then the water washes it down the drain. And that's the whole point. And, you know, it takes 20 seconds. You want to go both sides, front and back of the hands, and around the fingernails, and, you know, probably up to where you wear your wristwatch at least. Get your wrists involved as well.
If someone sneezes on me, I'm serious on this. Does the virus crawl, or does it just stay right where it lands?
This is not a crawler.
Okay,
it's going to stay where it lands.
Stay right where it lands.
Unless you touch something else and transfer it that way.
And what about the mail? If someone sneezes on my package, you know, does it go into porous things like that? Or is it just
money.
Solid? Yeah, money.
Always consider money dirty.
Dirty, yeah.
Especially coins. But we don't have great studies about various surfaces. But the guidance that's out there for cleaning does address, you know, for example, fabrics, hard surfaces and that sort of thing. They have it all laid out as categories.
So let's just recap this again. Again, be a good citizen, wash your hands, so forth. But just in social settings,
keep your distance.
Distance.
Yeah.
About the distance of you, me.
We don't want to be.
Yeah, we can't touch
each
other.
I feel like I was a trendsetter. I was socially distancing
myself way before this.
I have heard a few introverts saying this is our time.
Yeah. So keep a distance. Again, don't freak out. We're trying to get trying to get on top of this.
We're trying to stay ahead of it.
Yeah, not underneath
it. That's our goal.
So there we go.
And there are no active cases.
There are no active cases in this county. I actually verified that with my staff on the way, and I said, if we get a positive result while I'm on the air, please text me, and no texts from them have come in.
Great.
And you said it's okay to text your family members in the other room in the house now. That's always a joke.
It sounds like that's what JD wants to start doing.
I hate when people do that. When you're in the same house and you get a text from some, hey, I'm in the other room. Maybe now it's okay.
Real quick, in an office setting, like our office right here.
Right.
Just do the same thing. Keep that distance
from each other. Sanitize your surfaces frequently, especially after you've had visitors come in and out. It would be great to just
wipe it. Yeah.
Spray and wipe it down. Oh, JD, you asked me about bleach.
Yes.
Earlier.
Yeah,
bleach is absolutely effective against this virus.
Okay.
Number one, please don't mix it with any other chemicals. You don't want to create a toxic gas that can actually cause a chemical pneumonia. Okay, so don't do that. What you want is a clean bottle.
Okay.
And if it's a quart-sized bottle, it's a third of a cup.
Okay.
Basically it's a third of a cup per gallon. For a quart-sized bottle, it's 5 teaspoons
okay.
of bleach per water.
That won't.
We all may end up looking tie-dyed by the end of this. But
it's California. We've done that before.
Yeah, yeah. At least we won't be sick. We'll be healthy. So,
right.
Dr. Kerr, looking forward, anything you want to add to this? You know, looking in the weeks ahead.
Yes. This order from the guidance from the state and the order from me goes through the end of March.
Okay.
This is subject to us reevaluating, modifying, extending if we need to, because we are starting to get the calls from event planners for things that are happening in April and May.
Yeah.
For right now, I said, keep your planning process going. Start doing all the things that were in our scenario one of our guidance that we put out earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in scenario two. We're in the community transmission scenario, and that's why the more aggressive measures. I probably won't be able to tell most people until a week or maybe even a few days before an event whether or not they really have to cancel. Some people will decide to do that proactively because they just don't want to take the chance.
Right.
My daughter at university was planning a big Earth Day gathering at UC Santa Barbara. And at this point, with classes going online and everything for the month of April, they're already planning to postpone and hoping to do it in May.
So we've seen a lot at the paper of, and that's kind of the movement of the story of COVID-19 is the how rapidly things change, which is why I say stay on your radio, stay on the radio's stay on KVGC's Facebook page, stay on the Ledger Dispatch Facebook page. We get the information from the sources. I will say for us at the newspaper, if you are canceling an event, need to promote an event, or to-go orders at restaurants and that, we will be running those free of charge. We're going to announce that later today.
Sure.
And I know we'll be sharing it with Jim. So if you have events that...
Be scratching your face.
Yeah. If you have,
don't be touching it. God darn it now, Jack. Get out of here.
If you have, I have a real problem. I've been having to tie my hands down because I talk with my hands.
Pocket.
I'm like, shoot. But if you have events,
Dr. Kerr was
if you have events or if you need to promote to go, like restaurants, suddenly say, hey, you know what? We want to do to go orders. We will be able to run those free of charge and we'll be sharing those with the KVGC and getting it out there.
Thank you. That's another example of being a good citizen in the community. So thank you, Jack.
Dr. Kerr, without getting political on this, and please, we're not going to get political, but it seems to me that in China, they have begun to go back to work and things have kind of, you know, come back to a little bit of normalcy, if we can believe state-run media. So let's not get political. But so does that mean we may see an end to this coming soon?
That's our hope. So we do certainly have to observe what's happened in the other countries that where there have been spikes of cases. So China's one example. South Korea's another example.
Yeah.
Italy's in the throes of it right now. They're probably hitting their peak. They are overtaxing their healthcare system. They have shut down a lot of the country. But if the example in China is anything to go by, you hit that peak and then it starts to curve downward and you can start lifting some restrictions.
Yeah.
One of the just unfortunate occurrences about this is it emerged right as the Chinese Lunar New Year was being celebrated, which is like a time of pilgrimage for people. They go back to their homes and their relatives and just a lot of travel. So that was just kind of the worst possible time for it to hit. And interestingly enough, a lot of businesses and factories even, they're closed in observance of those Lunar New Year holidays. Mm-hmm. They extended those closures, and now with care and caution, they are starting to reopen some of them and start producing goods again.
Yesterday, ABC News was reporting we are 10 days behind Italy.
I have no idea who their expert is who would put that kind of absolute number
out.
That was
all over ABC.
Now, that's something that came to mind for me as Jack was talking about media. Mm-hmm. If media doesn't have access to, you know, all the information they want from the expert agency who's in charge, and some outlets, if they feel like they want to scoop something, they'll bring in somebody who may be in a related field or have worked in it before and, you know, look for a soundbite that's somewhat sensational.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking all of those with many grains of salt.
Well, and that's why I kind of wanted to focus on it here when we talk about the media here. I know Jim and I have talked many times about coverage when especially public health issues come up, Butte Fire of 2015. There is no competition locally. I mean, we always joke around about it. We have competition, certainly, in there, but there is no, hey, I'm going to scoop the radio. Certainly not when it comes to public health. Now, on some of the other fun things we might.
I mean, we want to get
it. But it is
who
fun.
Gives that championship
but when
sports
it comes to public
up,
health,
yeah.
then the
right.
other thing would be we go to the same source, and we're not really, at least at the paper, I don't go looking outside the area to say, okay, if I want to know what's going on with public health, I'm calling you.
Thank you.
And that's really...
And you said something important, Jack, that kind of frustrates me at different times of the year is when people go to social media for information and they don't go to the Twitter page of the CDC. They go to George in Fiddletown and George said this. So it's
well, especially with the computer virus out there now on the
that's going to hit a lot of
people.
That's
going
to
hit a lot
of people. Dr. Kerr, if you could give us just a little more time. We have one more question here for you. Just text in. Why is Italy being hit so hard?
My theory is that the mitigation measures were not aggressive enough at the beginning.
Do you think because it's a highly traveled area, I mean, a lot of tourists come in
that
and out?
That is certainly a possibility as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's certainly highly contagious.
I'm not going to comment on that. Are you talking about Italy as a country?
No,
we're traveling.
Oh, okay, sorry. Traveling in general, you do have to be careful.
Yeah. All right. Dr. Kerr, thank you very much for coming and being with us today.
Anything
that you'd like to cover? Anything you want to tell folks?
I want to thank you for helping get these messages out to our public. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank the public in advance for their cooperation and their patience during these trying times. I think that our risks in this sort of scenario is people feeling socially isolated from one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to reach out to family and friends via non-physical contact ways. Keep in touch by phone. Keep FaceTiming, Skyping, emailing. Don't isolate yourself emotionally.
I was at a dinner last Friday night, and we were, given the Spock sign and talking. Well, you were there.
I think you
were there at Dr.
Yes.
Bob's dinner. And then right up on stage, Bob and I shake hands with each other. We're trying to,
then you go and wash your hands.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Then you go and wash
your hands. And we're all going to accidentally touch our face.
Yeah.
And then we're going to kind of kick ourselves and say, okay, I really got to stick my hands in my pockets so I don't keep doing that.
You don't realize, until this came about, you don't realize how many times you touch yourself.
All the time.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The mask issue.
Sure.
One of the reasons we don't recommend masks is, number one, the simple surgical masks are not all that effective for airborne illness. They're, somewhat more effective for droplet illness. And this may end up, we may be able to back off some of those recommendations for healthcare workers, even to lesser masks. Mm-hmm. But when you've got a mask on your face, you're always reaching up to adjust it because it slides, or you feel like you just need a little extra breath, so you take it down for a few minutes. Every time you touch that, it's a potential time of contamination from a surface onto your face.
Gotcha.
And that's more risky than the air that you're breathing around you. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know my phone has never been this clean.
I was
going to
say,
years.
I worry about
I have
the
been
phone,
cloning
Jack.
My
that's,
fears.
Yes.
That's I've
my
been
biggest
cleaning
and,
my
know,
phone.
Bring your own pen places.
Good idea.
If you have to, get a delivery from FedEx or whatever and you use their stylus, please wash your hands afterwards.
And even in the home with your own family, you should practice these same measures.
I think it's not unreasonable to have good hygiene practices at home.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay.
Especially if somebody's sick.
Yes.
Put them in a separate room if it's possible. If you have the luxury of more than one bathroom, give them their own bathroom, kind of like you would if they had the stomach flu. Just take these measures to protect yourself and others.
I know we promised to let you out of here, but we have one more question. We keep getting these questions popping up.
That's okay. I want to get as many addressed as possible.
Every time I go to my phone, I'm not ignoring you. I'm reading a text that's coming through here. So the elderly, not necessarily with underlying illnesses, but the elderly, 60 and over, are more susceptible
to
this.
Don't you just hate that they're calling 60 elderly? Okay, I don't want to make light of this.
But okay,
I'll say,
so why?
So the why, I wish I had a great
answer. Is our immune system less than a young person?
Possibly. That's why they came out with a high-dose flu shot, for example, because the immune system in older folks does not respond as robustly to a stimulus as it did when you're little. And that may be one of the reasons why this is not showing up in any significant percentage of severe cases in the young ones, because their immune system may be more robustly fighting it off.
Gotcha.
I will say that if, you know, a person is only over 60 and is otherwise healthy, they're going to be at relatively less risk than someone who's over 60 and is on 10 medications for 4 or 5 chronic medical problems.
Someone that's under...
It's an additive risk.
Someone that's under 60 and is diabetic, because I hear diabetics are susceptible to this too?
Any underlying illness is going to make
an
individual, on a population basis, diabetics will probably get more sick than people who don't have diabetes. It's really hard to take those population statistics and apply them to an individual sometimes. It probably has to do with how well controlled is that diabetic. How, you know, what are their blood sugars on a daily basis? Do they have any underlying kidney problems due to their diabetes or vascular disease due to their diabetes? So it's really hard to put people in a bucket.
Dr. Kerr, was there any, like, you know, October, November, around the medical field, was there any, hey, there might be something strange coming out of China?
Not that I'm aware of, Jim. This was a standard cold and flu season.
Just hit us with it.
And really the international community heard of this was in late December.
Yeah. All right. Jack, anything?
No, just keep on. Hopefully the folks that are out there listening, tell everyone to listen to KVGC. Watch them on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Watch the Ledger Dispatch on Facebook. Pick up the paper. If you have events that are canceled or you need something promoted, we're going to do that free of charge for you. We'll pass those back and forth between us, and we certainly will be passing all the information on from our local officials and get it without know that when you're reading the stuff that it's accurate.
Paper does a great job on the community events, keeping up to date on.
Yeah,
well,
we're
going like
to add
this
to that a little bit, and on some of the we'll have a separate page just support local business. So if you're a restaurant and you have a to-go service, for example, instead of having to pay to run that, and we know some local businesses. Well, we don't know, but I assume some local businesses may be hurt by this and may already be hurting. Yeah. If you want to make a donation, the Lions Club canceled Dandelion Days. You know what? We're going to have a little piece in there that says, if you'd like to make a donation to the Lions Club, even though they couldn't hold Dandelion Days, here's how you do that, and we'll get that information out.
Right. So, I also saw some advice, and again, it's for people to just consider that if you were a ticket holder to a fundraising event that was canceled, even if a refund is offered, just consider saying, that's my gift to your organization.
Good citizen.
All right. Dr. Kerr, thank you very much. Again, the health department website is?
Amador County Public Health. If you Google us, our website will show up right at the top of your Google search. I don't know the web address
but
by
don't
heart.
Go to the... the COVID-19
don't
map.
Try and search the Johns Hopkins COVID-19 worldwide
do
map.
Not
yeah
I would not go there.
All right, Dr. Kerr, thank you very much for coming to be with
you
us
you are
today.
Welcome.
All right, Jack, thank you also.
Great press conference.
Yes, great. Yeah. No, we're supposed to yell
hand,
we're supposed to yell just... questions to her as she leaves, you know. Hey, yeah, one
that's
more
right.
Question.
Well,
you leave
that's
us
right. I forgot.
There we go. All right, Jack, thank you. Dr. Kerr, thank you very much.
Thank you.